In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. So last time we were talking about the four cardinal virtues. Who can name them for me? You name one?
Courage.
Joanna?
Justice.
Prudence.
Wisdom.
No?
Self-control
or temperance. Yeah. Wisdom is sometimes said in place of prudence, but So prudence is understood as practical wisdom. Okay, so we have justice, which is a harmonious ordering within ourselves and in our relationship with those around us. That's justice. Prudence is that practical wisdom, knowing what to do in the situation that we're facing. And then, of course, you have temperance or self-control. Sophrosyne in Greek. This actually means wholeness, whole-mindedness, but we can also translate it as chastity, or we could say integrity. It means to have integrity. And then, of course, there's courage or fortitude, which in Greek is andria, manliness, andria. So these are the four cardinal virtues, and I wanted to mention on the topic of courage that you know, we might ask ourselves, and we said last time, I referred to the book of Revelation, which says that cowards are going to be thrown into the lake of fire. So we don't want to be cowards, right? We want to be courageous. But what if we find ourselves, we feel that we're lacking in courage? And, you know, there are different things that we can do. Of course, with all of the virtues, we want to pray to the Lord to give us this gift of this virtue. But there's a connection with humility here, and also, of course, with obedience, because humility and obedience go together. But do you all remember the story of Saint Nikephoros, the martyr of Antioch? We just read it a couple of weeks ago, actually less, maybe a week and a half ago, on February 9th. So Saint Nikephoros had a good friend. They were best friends. And his friend was a priest, Father Saprikios, and they lived in Antioch. And Nikephoros was a layman, but they were dear friends. But once something caused Father Saprikios to be offended by his friend, maybe he felt like he had betrayed him somehow, or there was some kind of misunderstanding. And so Saprikios began to despise Nikephoros, his friend. Now, Nikephoros tried to heal their relationship. He tried to reconcile with his friend. He begged him to forgive him. And Saprikios refused to forgive him. So then, a persecution of Christians arose in Antioch, and Saprikios, as a priest, was one of the first to face trial. And he was tried as a Christian, and he was sentenced to be martyred. So he was on his way to his martyrdom. He was being brought to the place of his execution, and Saint Nikephoros found out about this, and he went and met his friend as he was on his way to his martyrdom, and he begged him, please, don't go. Glory to God that you're going to die for Christ. May the Lord strengthen you, but please don't go without forgiving me. Please forgive me. He begged him to forgive him. And Saprikios just looked the other way. And so he continued on his way to the place of execution, but at the last minute, he lost courage because he didn't have humility. He didn't have the humility to forgive his friend. He was proud. And so God's grace abandoned him because, you know, pride goes before a fall. God's grace will abandon those who have proud hearts and aren't willing to subsequently humble themselves. So he, at the last minute, he recanted, he repudiated Christ, and again, Saint Nikephoros was there. And he said, don't do this. Don't reject Christ. Please, my brother, please. But again, Saprikios just looked the other way, just proudly ignored his friend and continued to reject Christ. And then, of course, Saint Nikephoros said, I'm a Christian. Kill me in place of my friend. You know, like, I'll die for him. Right? Take me instead. And so he was put to death, and we don't know anything further about Sapricius, but may it be that through his dear friend Saint Nikephoros, that Sapricius also found salvation through his prayers. But in any case, this connection is very important between courage and humility. If we allow ourselves to grow proud, we'll lose our courage, lose our fortitude, lose our sense of purpose. And God's grace, of course, abandons us when in our pride. So this is bound to happen. Now, we can also say that courage and virtues generally are particularly challenged by, they're made difficult by the world around us and events that take place around us, and sort of the atmosphere, the context in which we live, which can be so distracting and so discouraging. And so this is something that we really have to fight against, is just the continuous distraction and discouragement of the world. And I mean, just look at, again, Sapricius, just the thought that he might save his life, and maybe, you know, Christ will forgive me if I don't do this, if I don't go through with this, he'll understand. He'll forgive me later. I can reject Christ, and then I can go back to him, or whatever that thought is, that sort of train of thought might have been, that temptation that he faced, whatever that was. We all face these kinds of distractions or discouragements, or being led astray by thoughts and by negative examples. I was thinking about how easy it is for me, for example. Let's say I'm planning to spend a little bit of time in the evening reading a spiritual book, and then I want to spend a little time praying, and then go to bed early enough so that I can get up early enough so that I can pray in the morning, have enough time praying in the morning. So this kind of like discipline that I want to have. But then, let's say in the evening, this is what I'm planning to do. This is the good thought that I have, to try to be disciplined and to go to bed early enough, to get up early enough, to do my spiritual disciplines and so on. Then I have a thought: maybe I'll just go look at this group that I'm part of friends on Telegram. And, you know, these are Orthodox friends. We share things with each other. A lot of times it's encouraging, but sometimes it's also discouraging. Sometimes there are things that are disturbing that, you know, we're sort of sharing with each other because we want to be aware of these things going on in the world. But how easy it is with this thing that's seemingly harmless or seemingly maybe even helpful, how easy it is to look at those things and then all of a sudden to have my whole purpose and focus dispersed. And now I'm thinking about all of these other things. Either maybe it's something light and entertaining, or maybe it's something, again, discouraging or frustrating or shocking or whatever it is. But how easy it is to just to veer off track. You have a purpose, and this is what you're planning to do. And something causes you to veer off of the path, and then you end up sort of in a state of dissipation, not maybe like drunkenness or something like that necessarily, but just in a mental state of disorder, dissipation, or having lost focus, having lost the single-minded focus on Christ. I was thinking also of an analogy, because I've been reading and listening to and even watching lately some different accounts of Civil War battles. And one thing that has struck me is just how easy it would be as a soldier. You're there, like, you know, kind of in a kind of entrenched in a position, and you have these enemy soldiers running towards you, and they're firing at you, and you're firing at them, and let's say, you know, your fellow soldiers on either side of you, your comrades in arms, they both get scared and they throw down their rifles, their muskets, and they flee, they run. What do you do? How easy it would be when you see others running to say, forget it then, you know, or to follow their example and to get up and to run. And what focus it would take, what courage to remain there when they're running away, when those around you are fleeing. Or the other example that's also very striking to me is that the soldier next to you, or maybe somebody that you're close to, or just he's your fellow soldier, he gets shot and killed right next to you, you know, and it's probably very gruesome. And again, to in spite of that, to stay focused on your task, to keep the enemy in your sight, and to keep loading your musket and keep firing, I mean, that takes incredible nerve and sort of a single-minded focus. So how is that possible for us? Well, and of course, I mean, now we're talking about the spiritual life. How do we remain focused? How do we remain courageous? How do we stay on the path of virtue generally, of all of the virtues? And thinking about these things, I found a place in this book, it's called the Evergetinos, that speaks to these questions and speaks to this need to remain focused when maybe the people around us are giving us a different example. They're giving us an example that would lead us astray, perhaps, or just cause us to lose hope or to give up or something along those lines. Well, this is called the Evergetinos. It's named for a monk, Father Paul Evergetinos, who was a monk in the 11th century. And it's a collection of stories and of writings of the Holy Fathers, from the sayings of the Desert Fathers, and from various texts that it's drawn from, and then it's organized by subject. This is just the first of four volumes of the Evergetinos, and it was first edited, a manuscript was edited and printed, published for the first time. Even though it was compiled back in the 11th century, it was published for the first time by Saint Nicodemus of the Holy Mountain in the late 1700s. So, as I said, it's organized by subject, and the subject headings are called hypotheses. So this is hypothesis 25, and by hypothesis, it just means the theme, the sort of like the general idea, the subject. And so these are things that are grouped together under this subject. And here's the subject. I'll read the description to you. Concerning the fact that evil is easy, and that there are many who choose this, especially in our day, that virtue is demanding, and that there are few who pursue it, and that we must emulate the latter and pay no heed to the majority. We want to imitate, to emulate those who pursue virtue and not pay attention to those who aren't, right? Those who aren't pursuing virtue. So to emulate the saints, the ones who are the good examples, and to let go of the other examples. So I'm just going to read a few of the selections here, and probably we'll continue next time with reading a little bit more from this section. So the first, this is from the Hierondikon, which is just a collection of sayings of the fathers, for example, the Desert Fathers. One of the brethren came to Abba Theodore of Fermi and said to him, "Such and such a brother returned to the world." The elder replied, "Are you surprised at this? Do not be surprised. But be more amazed if you hear that someone was able to escape from the mouth of the enemy. And I think that this is a key thing for us to keep in mind. So often, the temptation is to be scandalized by the bad example of someone else. And sometimes it might even be somebody that we looked up to before. Somebody that we held in high regard. Maybe a member of the clergy. And we see this person fall somehow, or, make some kind of terrible mistake, fall into some sin, and this kind of thing. And I think there's a combination of responses that we may have inside of us. I think there's a kind of, how can I put it, like a sort of unhealthy curiosity that we have about these things. That's one thing, one kind of response. There's also shock, a genuine shock sometimes that we feel. There's a kind of disillusionment that we may feel if we see somebody that we looked up to, doing something, somehow letting us down. There can be a sense of disillusionment, of betrayal. The danger is that it causes us to lose heart, to become disheartened, to kind of lose hope, to feel like, well, if they're not taking it seriously, or if they're not struggling anymore, well, maybe I shouldn't either. So this brother comes to this Abba, and he said, brother so-and-so left and went back to the world. He gave up his monastic vows, right? He had made a commitment, and then he gave it up, and he went back. So he fell away somehow. But the elder says, don't be surprised at this. This happens so often. We know this. The devil's always after everyone, and he's always doing everything he can to drag people back to the world. We should be amazed when somebody isn't pulled back into the world, when somebody remains strong. And those are the examples that we should look at, and with amazement, just a sense of awe and gratitude to God. So he says, do not be surprised by that, but be more amazed if you hear that someone was able to escape from the mouth of the enemy. So this is the example that we want to look at, and not the other, and not lose heart. An elder said, it is better to live with three men who fear the Lord than with 10,000 who do not have the fear of God. For in the last days, among the hundreds in the Cenobitic monasteries, so Cenobitic, y'all know what that word means. It's the Cenobitic monastery is like a big monastery that's a community. That's simply what it means, is like a community monastery, as opposed to just maybe a tiny little cell where a single monk or nun works out their salvation, or maybe just one or two or three monastics live with an elder or something like that. So a Cenobitic monastery is basically the communal life, living in a community. So it applies to all of us, what's being said here. Even though we don't live in a monastery, we live in a community. One, either our family or, we're around people all the time. So it is better to live with three men who fear the Lord than with 10,000 who do not have the fear of God. For in the last days, among the hundreds in the Cenobitic monasteries, very few will be saved, for all will turn into devotees of the refectory, the dining hall. They'll be devoted to the dining hall and to gluttony, to love of power and avarice. Many are called, but few are chosen. Now this may sound like a hard word, but I think something that we should glean from this is, again, not to look to the example of the many who are distracted, who are maybe serving their belly or just serving something else, some idol, but always to be looking for the example of the few who really live with the fear of God, who really love God, and who are devoted to God and not devoted to, to the table, to eating, or to whatever it might be. So really, I think the point here is precisely not to fixate on the sins of others, right? It's to do the opposite. Don't look at that. Don't worry about that. And don't be surprised if what happens is, you know, when you sort of look around at the world, you see lots of people who are not giving good examples. Don't be surprised by that. Pray for them. Give them to God. You know, entrust them to God. But we should be looking to the examples that are going to help us to stay on the right path, to stay focused, to stay devoted to Christ. Abba John recounted that one of the elders had seen this in an ecstatic vision. He had a spiritual vision. Behold, three monks were standing on the opposite shore of the sea. There came to them a voice from the other side which said, "Take up flaming wings and come to me." So you have three monks, they're on the shore of the sea, and the voice of God comes and says, "Take up flaming wings and come to me." Right? Fly to me. Two of them took up flaming wings and flew to the other side. The other stayed and shed many tears and cried aloud. He eventually took up not fiery wings, but weak and powerless ones. He toiled, sinking and rising again, finally, after much toil, reaching the other side. So it is with this generation. Although it takes up wings, they are not flaming, but utterly weak and powerless. Again, it may sound like a hard word, maybe even a discouraging word, sort of like, well, what can we do? We live in this difficult generation where people don't have a fiery love for God, you know, because that's what the wings represent, like a fiery devotion to the Lord that helps you to just stay single-minded. So, in other words, I think we can apply this to our situation in which it's because of this continual distraction, continually being pulled in different directions, continually being discouraged, and you know all of that. That the reality is, it's very difficult for us to sort of just take up wing and fly and follow Christ to where we need to go. But it's not hopeless. That's really the point. That although we live in the midst of all of this distraction and discouragement, it's not hopeless because it's still possible through toil and sinking and rising again, you know, falling down, getting back up, and struggling, it's still possible to take up wings, even if they're weak wings, and to fly to the Lord. And so this is what we're being called to do. And then the next account is one that I shared with you a couple of weeks ago, the saying of Abba Eskirion, who says that there's the conversation of the desert fathers, and they're saying, what have we accomplished? We fulfilled God's commandments. What will those who come after us accomplish? They only do half as much as we've done. But those who live in the last times will not... I'll just read. I like the way it's put here. The men of that generation will accomplish no work at all. You know, like nothing particularly impressive. Temptation will come upon them, but those who are found worthy in that age will be greater than we and our fathers. So, even in an age filled with unbelievable distractions, an unbelievable degree of confusion, and all kinds of things stealing away our attention, our focus. Nevertheless, if we'll just struggle, keep coming back, bringing our mind, bringing our hearts, our attention back to Christ, God's grace will be with us. And those who are faithful in such a generation are considered greater even than the fathers who didn't have as many distractions. So we have to courageously fight against the distractions, and we have to seek to cultivate focus on Christ and not to allow all of the discouraging examples or words from people or stories that are shared with us, the gossip, all of that stuff to cause us to look away. We have to really resist that with all of our might so that we can at least take up feeble wings, some kind of wings, with which to fly across the sea of this life to the Lord. And it's far from being hopeless. There's all the possibility in the world to remain faithful to Christ, even in such a generation as this. And I'll just end again by reminding you of the words of Father Zacharias of the monastery in Essex, England, who says that that Christians are judged according to the generation in which they live, right? So, in a sense, that should be very, very hopeful for us. That it's like God's standard for us, knowing what we're up against, his standard is different than the standard that he uses for the other generations that don't have all of the same distractions and things like that. So he knows, like, he has a sliding scale, right? He knows how to give us a grade according to how we've been prepared and the resources that we have. And so our God is merciful. He loves us. He's with us no matter what. And he's right there to reach out to us and to raise us up whenever we are discouraged. We just have to know where to look. When we look away from Christ, then we fall into the pit of despondency. But when we look to Christ, then there's hope. We immediately, there's hope, there's help, but our hearts have to turn to him rather than being fixated on the earth and on the delights of the refectory and so on.